Alec Campbell, what are you going to do without having to go to the arena for an entire week? Actually, more. It's 2 weeks.
I mean, I'll miss the snack parfaits. I'll miss the hightailing it from the studio to the game on weeknight games.
Right.
To try to scramble to sit in my seat for first intermission. But fortunately, we've got back-to-back 10:30 West Coast games, so I'll be here in studio. I don't actually get the day off. I still have to do the show here.
As I said that, I was actually forgetting that you still... But I mean, me too. I mean, I'm just going to be at home on the... on the screened-in porch watching the games at night. So.
In the end, I'm no different than any other diehard Canes fan, right? Everybody's going to be up watching the games late on the West Coast.
Right.
But I kind of view this particular scenario almost like Thursday Night Football. If you play on Thursday Night Football, you almost get like a built-in bye because the Canes play 10:30 and 10:30 on Tuesday and Wednesday, and then they play at 10 o'clock on Friday, and then I have the whole weekend off,
and then
they don't play for another... They have six days between games.
I've got
mm-hmm. a tough week, but then I get a nice reprieve after that.
Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, Thursday.
Yeah.
And then they're home for a while. So that's good. And
the good news is that after, and people won't care about this, but I'll say it anyways, but we have, after the Thursday, after the 2:10:30 back-to-back games, we have a meeting here at work at 10 o'clock a.m. So that's cool.
We do have a meeting Thursday at 10 o'clock?
Yeah.
I'm glad I heard about this. All right. Well, and our sodium count will be lower because the snack parfaits are very high sodium.
You need to just look at those differently. It's electrolytes you're getting.
Oh, okay.
The salt provides you electrolytes.
That's a good point. All right. Let's start this.
This is the Canes Corner Podcast with host Adam Gold, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Now here's the host of the Canes Corner Podcast, Adam Gold.
All right, this is episode 5 or 6 of the Canes Corner podcast this year. Alec Campbell, Adam Gold. We are 5-1-0. How hard is it to erase the one of those of that 5-1-0 since that was essentially a hockey rock fight?
Yeah, I actually was a little surprised at the downtrodden nature of the Hurricanes head coach Rod Brind'Amour and some of the players after mm-hmm. the game. And I think this goes to show you what we can and cannot see from the stands
mm-hmm.
because we like to challenge effort a lot of times. And I thought the effort was fine,
yeah,
to be honest with you.
The problem.
But I mean, Jordan Staal made a comment about, you know, they didn't play hard enough and, you know, the coach wasn't very happy with the game. And to be honest with you, like, to me, that was simply a scenario where Columbus figured out the magic elixir. They came up with a plan. John Tortorella
mm-hmm.
came up with a game plan for the Hurricanes, and they executed it. And Carolina had a tough time penetrating the interior of the ice. They couldn't get to the blue paint very often. They struggled to get high danger chances.
Shout out to Bill Peters.
First game of the year where they didn't out high danger the other team.
Right.
And to me, that was ultimately the issue in the game. And I give most of the credit to Columbus for just playing a better game. I thought the Hurricanes fought for it. I just thought it was tough for them that game.
Yeah, the interesting, talking to Rod and the players after the game, I think the word effort was probably either misused or misconstrued. I don't think they lacked effort in the game. I think for Rod, it was more of a commitment to fight for what they needed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, not getting to the front of the net.
Right.
Wasn't as much of that in this game as there was against the Islanders and other games. There was not a lot of traffic in front of Jonas Korpisalo. And Carolina had been living with traffic in front of the net because you have to mm-hmm. with the goaltenders in this league. So Korpisalo saw a lot of shots. He saw a lot of them clean. And therefore, Carolina, who had plenty of shots and enough shots to score more than 2 goals, only scored 2 goals. And I think the all 3 goals, and this is really what bothered Brind'Amour and the team more than anything. All 3 goals were gifted. There was I think it was on the power play.
The first one, yeah.
First one where it was just a simple backdoor, nobody there. Yeah.
Well,
they can't allow that.
On that particular play, it looked like Fogle was trailing.
Actually, it wasn't a power play. There were, it was an even strength goal thing.
Yeah, Fogle was trailing the guy who was Nudivara, who eventually scored, and then he just left him.
Yeah.
So there was some kind of communication breakdown there or misunderstanding of where you're supposed to be or what you're supposed to do. Because
and he's a defenseman. If you let a defenseman get all the way, that's Warren Fogle's guy.
So he should have stayed with that guy, and for whatever reason, he didn't. So for me, you know, I don't look. Yeah, yes, it was in the end gifted because he was wide open, and it was as easy a goal as you're going to score there. But that's not an effort issue to me. That's a not
it's a
playing in the system,
issue, right? Aho let Oliver Bjorkstrand come out of the corner with the puck and skate around and score.
Mm-hmm. That one was tough.
Seabass definitely wants that sequence back.
And he was upset afterwards too. He was very upset, but.
Could have seen his face. He was sitting right next to Jordan Staal when I was talking to Jordan, and Aho was like, he had a Cam Newton quality about him after a loss. He just looked despondent about it. And then the McGinn turnover at the blue line right early in the third period.
Right, but again, those to me aren't effort. Like I thought that Aho gave good effort trying to trail Bjorkstrand, but he got beat.
He
got one-on-one beat by a guy in the NHL. It happens from time to time.
Yeah.
It's exacerbated at the moment because Aho's not producing on the offensive side. So, but to me, you know, that happens from time to time. The McGinn thing, lazy. Lazy turnover. It's a lazy pass that gets picked off. You can't do that.
And then he fought all the way back down the ice.
And he did, but he was too far out of position to make up for it.
And Pierre-Luc Dubois held him off.
Exactly.
Great play by Dubois.
It was a great move. Right. And he shielded him off the way you're supposed to do it. So, yeah, I mean, look, it wasn't their best game, obviously, right? But they're not going to win 82. It's unrealistic for that to be the case.
Well, it can't happen now.
And one of the things that I talked about after the game with John Forslund is, and actually with Rod before the game, because his sentiment so far this year has been, we're winning when we're not playing our best hockey.
Mm-hmm.
And that's great. But the other side of that is that you can get lulled into believing, to getting away with things that you're not supposed to get away with, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, if you want to spin this positively, it's a good check of yourself to lose. Like every once in a while, you got to have that moment or that game that makes you look in the rearview mirror. You know, I use that analogy because I've backed into people before because I can get lazy looking in my rearview mirrors when I'm driving, right?
Right.
Well, you back into somebody and you're going to start looking in your rearview mirrors for a little while, you know? And sometimes you need those checks of your game in order to kind of refocus. And I also look at the schedule they played to. You know, sometimes that willingness to get to those hard areas, as they say, you know, can become a product of the amount of hockey the guys have played. I mean, they've been on a high.
Right.
They've played, you know, five highly contested games because remember, three of them were won in overtime.
First three in overtime. Right.
They had to come back a couple of times, so there's a lot of pressure. And then it becomes like a thing where it's like, okay. Can you keep this going?
Are you the best team in the NHL?
Yeah, are you the best team in the NHL? All of these things that suddenly, you know, pile on top. And, you know, maybe after a while, the fatigue sets in a little bit and you're unwilling to do the things that you're supposed to do.
Yeah, look, the only alarming thing about the loss and the first six games, for me, is that Sebastian Aho's only point is an empty net goal.
Mm-hmm.
Now that doesn't mean he's played poorly, but he gets judged on being Sebastian Aho. Like nobody would complain if he were, I'll just use Jordan Martinook.
Right.
Right. But Aho is supposed to be at the head of the line when it comes to points and production. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been there. There have been more chances the last couple of games than there were the first few. But that to me is the only alarming thing is that they need number 20 to be a top line player. And right now he hasn't been there. And then when you throw in the fact that he got beat out of the corner.
Right. That exacerbates
things,
it.
Right. All of these things add up. So that's my only concern.
And, you know, people were talking about, you know, can the empty netter spring him forward? I don't really see how that. I don't see that logic. I mean, it's an empty net goal.
It's a hope.
Like,
it's just a hope.
I mean, Sebastian Aho needs to beat goaltenders, right?
Right.
Like, in order for him to feel like he's doing what he's supposed to do.
What's the NHL record for empty net goals in a season? I mean, could you score 40 goals all in empty net situations?
So, Andrei Svechnikov only has an empty netter far this year, too, when he leads the team in points. So maybe there is something to be said about it.
All right, let's... Well, he's...
been an assist
he's
machine.
He's tied for first in points, because here's where I want to go. I want to talk a little bit about Douglas Jonathan Hamilton.
Junior,
right.
And I know this because I missed the second Columbus goal while looking this up.
Right.
But that also speaks to how quickly they scored after the Hurricanes.
That was a kind of a backbreaker. Look, you understand what my timeline looks like because while this whole thing was playing out with Justin Faulk, I was of the mind that Faulk overall better than Hamilton overall. And that I'd like to see the team keep both. Well, that didn't happen. So now every time Dougie Hamilton does something, my time is fine. I'm amused by it at this point.
Right.
It fills up with Dougie Hamilton scored a goal. You still think? I'm like, look, what we're seeing from Dougie Hamilton, and actually preview of Tuesday night's Stormwatch, which you'll have an interview with Sebastian Aho. Aho said it, that the real good thing about the way Dougie is playing is that he's playing two-way hockey better than he's ever played it.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the difference. The points were always going to be there with Dougie Hamilton, yeah. Douglas Jonathan Hamilton Jr.
Well, I mean, he takes so many shots, and he's got, I think at this point, he's got the highest shot percentage of any Hurricanes defenseman in franchise history.
Yeah, it's 21%.
Or goal percentage, excuse me.
21%, yeah, shooting percentage,
right.
What it is. Yes, 21.1%. It's not highest on the team. It is among goaltenders, but it is not highest among the team.
No, I'm just saying
overall,
in his
time
as a Hurricanes defenseman, it's up at like 24%
or something. It's remarkable. But that to me is the difference in Hamilton's game, is that they're using him on the penalty kill, and maybe that in and of itself has been what's good for Hamilton.
Funny how that's been working the last couple of years, hasn't it, in terms of making guys defensive players.
Teravainen and Aho among them. So I think there's so many good signs. The offense is great. I mean, what did also Svechnikov, you'll get this week. Svechnikov was like, when he shoots it, I'm surprised when it doesn't go in.
Yeah, at this point.
Right. So to me, that's the difference in Hamilton, is that on the defensive end, he's been great.
Yeah, I agree with that. And again, the observations from the stands regarding effort are taken with a grain of salt. But, you know, I commented on this during the game the other day. And for me, it just seems like Dougie's moving his feet a little more. You know, there's a little extra output on his end in terms of energy and effort, especially defensively, that I think is visible. Right now, like in time, you know, there were so many times over the past couple years where it always appeared that there was a lack of urgency for me, like guys retrieving a puck out of their own end as if no one was coming after it from the other team. Right. And to me, I was always like, you have to just pretend like someone's coming for it every time. And Dougie appeared that way a lot last year. There were instances, especially early on. And we later learned about some injuries that he had and stuff like that.
Yeah, he had a hand injury last year, first half.
That I think, you know, maybe hampered him a little bit. But for me, he just looks like he's outputting more effort this year. And in terms of how the Justin Faulk thing, you know, goes along, I think like on paper, your point stands. But when you incorporate all of the external factors, like this now being, you know, without Justin Faulk here, how does that affect Dougie's mindset, right? The fact that he feels like he's, you know, it's his spot now, right? Or it's his defense core or whatever.
The responsibility.
You know, and
maybe
so
maybe that matters, right?
Maybe it does matter.
Yeah.
So yeah, okay, you know, that it's, I still think if you look on paper, you've got two great players in Justin Faulk and Dougie Hamilton. That makes sense that they would have been better. But now without Justin Faulk, how does that affect what Dougie's doing? We're seeing that right now. And, I mean, he's been ridiculous so far.
Here's the other thing about Hamilton that I don't want to overlook is the surroundings. So he comes up in Boston. That's a harsh sports city, especially if things don't go well right away. And we see, especially with defensemen, it takes some time to get used to playing in the NHL unless you are like a ridiculous, you know, Norris Trophy talent, which, by the way, I mean, at some point this year, if this continues, he's going to be in that discussion solely based on points, right? But he's playing well defensively. And then he goes to Calgary, where, well, you think, well, smaller Western Canadian. No, man, that's...
hockey town.
Right, they live for it. So, and there were also a lot of things said about Dougie from those locker rooms upon exit.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them were anonymous. But I'm sure that bothered him too. If what happened in the Washington series happened in one of those two markets, it would have been talked about incessantly over the summer. We all remember the play in Washington. He didn't want to take the hit from Alexander Ovechkin, right? But we're smart enough to not assign that to Dougie Hamilton for the rest of time.
Right.
And so we don't talk about it, and we shouldn't talk about it anymore. It's a moment in time. Let it go. Hope it doesn't happen again, but let it go and let the guy do his thing. And I do think that some people, I think you called it small pond.
Yeah, that's right? What it is. He's a big fish in a small pond. Some people operate better in that scenario.
He's
right?
I think you can tell. Then you go to the bench interview with Mike Maniscalco. After which game was it? Was it the it was the Tampa game.
Mm-hmm.
And all right, Tampa game?
Yeah, I believe
was
so.
Was it the Tampa game? Whatever game it was. When the people were chanting his name.
Mm-hmm.
And you could tell. You could tell that got to Dougie.
Yeah, he felt it.
So I think there's a lot of factors, even off the ice, that are playing into this.
I mean, we talked about it, I think, in the last podcast, where Dougie's a different dude. He's a different kind of cat. He's a quieter dude. You know, it's hard. Like, sometimes it's hard to get him to open up because he's, like, the volume of his voice is quiet.
Oh, he is quiet, yeah.
I mean, like, he's just not the outgoing, bombastic guy that other guys are, you know? And that's fine. Like, there's nothing wrong with being that kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
But it lends itself probably to this type of market more than other places, you know? So, I mean, I got nothing else to say about him except that he's been extremely good so far this year. It's been a breath of fresh air. I loved him when I first saw him last year in the preseason because he's so smooth offensively. Yeah. He can make things look effortless, and it's great when he's producing, but when he's not playing well, it looks lazy. But that's just kind of the nature of his game. And fortunately, so far this year, he's taken a bigger step defensively, and that's been probably, you know, the goals are always great because that's what stands out, but the defensive nature of his game has taken another step, and that's probably even more appealing to us and the head coach.
Let's, before as we wrap up, Dougie, and then move on to your favorite player, the making it look effortless confuses people into thinking that there's no effort.
Right.
And you can use a lot of other players in any sport. Like Daryl Strawberry used to be the smoothest.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, language strides and like, man, would you just try hard? Meanwhile, he's faster than almost anybody on the field. It just looks like he's not expending a lot of energy because he doesn't have to do that. And I think Hamilton is an effortless skater, and that's the difference between this team and other teams.
And maybe that's the theme of this podcast, is that you can't discern effort from the stands. Like, and this is what I've said forever.
Yeah.
Like, you show me a team that looks sluggish, and I'm going to show you a team that lost almost every time. Right. Well, you show me a team that looks like they're not giving effort, and I'm going to show you a team that just lost.
So is it easier to discern effort or leadership from the stands?
Oh my God!
We don't need
again. It's the same. It's causation,
the same,
correlation.
Right, it's
all. It's all that stuff is most of the time.
That's my favorite.
And it's,
thing.
It's not that those things don't exist or right. They don't matter. It's just that discerning the amount of them or whatever, or how much they impacted a certain game or season or stretch of games or whatever is completely dependent on the outcome.
Dougie Hamilton is shooting 21.1% on the season through six games. He is second on the team in shooting percentage, two.
Second on the team in shooting percentage, two. I don't know.
Eric Halla.
Oh, Eric Halla. Yeah.
Shooting 27.8%.
Yeah.
I do want to point out that his goal against Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
If you add up the total distance from the goal line.
Which, by the way, Dougie had a tertiary assist on.
He did. It should have been. He started the whole play.
Right.
But the total distance of Halla's first four goals was about one-third of the distance of the fifth goal. Because he was in the slot when he shot the puck. He was maybe 5 feet from the goal in his first four. What have you liked the most about Halla?
I mean, I just think in terms of an overall impact, he's been the most impactful. Dougie has been great, obviously scoring goals, and we've talked about his defense. But I think that when you think about the fact that Eric Halla adds a level of depth to the center position, he scores goals, he plays defensive hockey, and he wins a ton of faceoffs.
Yeah.
In terms of like a complete output of production, he's been maybe the best player for the whole season, I think. And that's what I like about him. And so I think he alleviates things for Jordan Staal.
Sure.
I think he gives the coach options that the coach didn't have in right. the past, especially as it pertains to faceoffs. You got to have a big faceoff one and you're in a defensive zone situation. You're in, you know, an end of game situation. You're in an overtime. You know, Eric, when they the last game they won in overtime, I believe
against Tampa,
Halla won the opening faceoff in overtime. So
you don't have to beat Jordan up.
I'm
every defensive
right. You don't have to beat him up.
Halla's been better statistically in the faceoff circle than Jordan now.
I think he was actually just under 40% under 50% last game.
I mean, he's 54%, a little over 50% on the season. Jordan is a little under 50, little over 54% of the season. Jordan Staal is just under 53% on the season. Lucas Walmark actually leads them.
Right, and so like he fortifies that center position. I mean, that was the thing. Like I always go back to in the past years. Like last year, when you're looking at the center position, I mean, you've got at that time Aho, who's playing his first year right. as a center. You got Victor Rask, who we know what happened to him.
Right.
Lucas Walmark, we didn't know about yet, and Jordan. So those were your guys down the middle.
But even fast forward, Jordan Staal missed 34 games last year. So the end of December until Jordan came back at the trade deadline, they went with essentially three rookies down the middle.
Right.
And Greg McKegg. Those
right.
were their centers.
Yeah.
Right. And, man, people don't, I mean, if one of the things that Rod will go back to last year and go, I don't know how that happened, is the fact that they did it with such inexperience down the middle
yeah.
without Jordan Staal. And then you see what it did for Walmark. Lucas has become a really good defensive player too. He's not a traditional 4C in that he's not a grinder, he's not a banger. He's really he really profiles to be like a third center. So somebody who can add some offense. He was on the power play all last year. But now you have him in the four spot. And you can see one of the reasons I think Halla has been so effective is that you've got Aho and Staal essentially slotted ahead of him.
Right. So he plays
for the time. Yeah, he's playing against, not playing against ones.
Right.
I mean, Aho played against the top line at Columbus all game and had to deal with that.
Yeah. Do you think there's a chance that Rod may switch that up at some point if we keep seeing Aho struggle?
I think like maybe.
Where he bumps, or do you just stick with a thing that's working?
I think, I mean, then it becomes a service of ice time. So if you can't be afraid. It's actually one of the things that I talked to Rod at the end of last year. I said, what do you, I mean, because we all know, I mean, Aho had the injury. We thought it was lower body, but it did manifest. There were upper body issues, too, with Sebastian because he stopped taking face-offs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they threw Brock McGinn in the circle ahead of Sebastian Aho plenty in the playoffs, early in the playoffs. And one of the things I asked Rod, so, you know, because I think Seabass went the last 14 games of the regular season with no goals.
Yeah.
Right? So I said, what do you need? What's the next step for him? And he said, I have to be able to play him, or he has to be able to play against the other team's best players all the time. Yeah. And I'm not saying that isn't the case. I think it's the case. He's off to a slow start now. But if Aho's going to be the top center and justify the 8.454 average annual value, he's got to be able to play 18 to 20 minutes, and it's got to be against top guys. Not saying that Halla can't do that too. I think Halla's dynamite. But I don't think Rod will change that up. I really don't. I mean, you got to get the most out of Aho unless this persists for a long time, in which case,
yeah,
then you got to go about winning.
I'm inclined to believe that he'll break through here soon. I mean, remember a couple years ago, it took him, I think, 16 games to score his first goal. And, you know, at that point, he was in, I think, his second season, right? Or was he in his first season?
His first two full seasons, he went a long time without scoring goals.
So, I mean, you know,
he had points, but no goals.
Now, it's not the same, I guess, but in terms of pressure that you're putting on yourself, you know, maybe his pressure at that time was trying to stay on the team and be an impactful player on the team. And now he gets the contract, so he's in a way going through a similar situation, putting pressure on himself. So I still think that at some point he'll come through, but, you know, we need him to do it soon.
Oh, there's no question. Again, he's got to take some pressure off Dougie Hamilton. Somebody else has to do the scoring. Back to Eric Halla, because you mentioned some of the other things that he does. He didn't kill penalties in Vegas. So I want to go, why?
Well, there you go again.
Right?
There's another guy killing penalties.
He's been tremendous. Look, the Hurricanes' penalty kill isn't where Rod Brindamore wants it yet.
No.
But a couple of the power play goals they've allowed have been right off the draw.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, literally, face off, two passes, goal. It's hard to blame the penalty kill that much for that because it happened so quickly. I think their penalty kill is in pretty good shape. But, Rod, that's where you got to win those face-offs to at least now you want to force them to enter the puck and set up. They didn't have to. But Halla's killed at both 5-on-3s that Carolina's been dealing with. It was Halla. Halla does that.
Mm.
And Stahl is a great option, but Halla's a little quicker.
Yeah.
And, you know, you just hope he holds up because that you've seen the scar.
Oh,
That knee injury is gruesome.
Yeah. Their penalty kill, remember last year, didn't start off very good.
No.
And it got better as the season went along. And this year, I feel like we're seeing, I don't know, the power play, for whatever reason, has been really good so far. And John Forsen always says that you can't really make any glaring observations on special teams for a while.
Yeah,
for
you
the
need
first
at least
month
10
or
games.
Two.
At least 10 games, right.
So I'm going to hold off on deciding that the power play is really good and the penalty kill is really bad. But I think what the one thing that they've done, and they've taken a fair amount of penalties, and I asked Rod about it the other day, about whether or not he's a little more okay with the guys towing the line aggressively and taking more penalties because of the fact that they've been able to score enough to mitigate it.
Right.
And, I mean, his answer was, honestly, he thinks that a lot of the penalties were chintzy. That was the word he used.
How do you spell that?
Chintzy, I learned. Thank you, Twitter. I appreciate you.
Kane's Twitter is the best.
Yeah,
I love Kane's Twitter.
Everybody just ready to pounce all the time. But I learned something.
Just keeping us honest, man.
So I appreciate that.
That's all right.
But I do wonder, you know, if it is a sign maybe of the confidence this team has that they're willing to take a few more penalties than maybe they did in the past. They've had two games so far where they've taken six penalties.
Yeah,
they took five penalties a couple of nights ago. I think they only got to four or three on Saturday night
against Columbus. Yeah, either two or three, right?
So
they should have taken more penalties against Columbus.
So that was good. But you know, the thing they've been able to do is score, which I think is another sort of emerging element of this season. Is the Hurricanes were averaging about 4.5 goals per game through the first five, mm-hmm. which was good for, I think, sixth in the league. They were tied for sixth in the league in terms of goals per game. And, you know, if you're going to be able to do that, then you can afford to take more penalties. You can afford to give up more goals.
Right.
Which is kind of a departure from the way this team has played in the past. Like, in the past, it's been make it a 2-1 game, make it a 3-2 mm-hmm. game, you know, get really good goaltending because you have to have that. But this year, maybe it's different. Maybe it's, you know, we can score a ton of goals when we're down. We're confident we can come back. When we give up leads, we can get them back, things like that.
All right, final thing as we just kind of go through players here at the start of the season. And again, the Hurricanes will be in action in L.A. on Tuesday, San Jose on Wednesday, and then Anaheim, which is essentially low-rent L.A. And before, you've ever been to Anaheim?
No.
Nah, it's just, don't
go. I've never been to that part of California. I was born in San Francisco.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Why didn't I know that?
Yeah. Spent the first two glorious years of my life.
You must have great memories.
Yeah.
Brett Pesce. When we go back and we talk about this start, and Pesci's got a couple of goals, but it isn't about the goals.
Mm-hmm.
Pesce has been, I think the coaching staff looks at Pesce as having been their best defenseman
mm-hmm.
through six games. It's been amazing. And imagine that guy with Slavin and Hamilton, and you know Gardner was brought in to be, you know, essentially the replacement for Falk, and he's on a third pair. The fact that Pesce has emerged as being this good, is remarkable.
Yeah, Brett's is the type of player that, he just doesn't show up on the stat sheet all that much. I mean, he does. Enough.
Got three points.
But the
40-point pace.
But you have to watch. Mm-hmm. Like the beauty in Brett's game is more the positions that he puts himself in, the way he recovers, the way he uses his stick, the way he shields guys away from the puck.
Mm-hmm.
It's all of those things that make him sort of a. I hate to use unsung hero, but it's like it's not flashy.
It's easy to forget him.
It's easy to forget him. And I'm not trying to call him like Calvin DeHaan, even though Calvin DeHaan was a really, you know, solid defensive defenseman. But he was, I think, a little more basic than Brett was. I think Calvin was a little more simple.
Yeah.
And Brett is a little more nuanced in the way he gets things done. But it's like he's one of those players that you have to watch him when he's away from the puck to really appreciate how he does his job.
He doesn't hit. Right? He's not a physical player, too.
He's not a hitter. He's obviously not a great finisher, although I asked him about that the other day. He's like, listen, I want to try to showcase that I do have some kind of offensive upside. But it's like you have to see how he gets to the positions that he gets in to really understand like how good he is, which means you can't watch the puck sometimes.
He's a really smart player. Smart players have a way of understanding positioning and where they have to be and what's about to happen in front of you.
Right, he anticipates so well.
One of, I'll draw another analogy from another sport. Cal Ripken Jr. wasn't really a great defensive shortstop, but he was so smart that he had the ability to see what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then position himself accordingly.
Yep.
And it wasn't just that he played every game that had him leading the American League in chances. It was the fact that he just knew where things were going to happen. So, like, Why was he there? Well, because he saw it before it happened.
Right.
And it's an unteachable thing. And I'm not saying that Brett Pesce is Cal Ripken, but I think Pesce has a knack for anticipating what's going to happen. He's just a really smart player, and he's athletic. He's a very good athlete.
Yeah, I mean, I think that applies to all
for
sports.
For a Yankee fan.
Yeah, well, true. And things are getting hairy in that series.
Mm-hmm.
That's true for every sport, though. Like, I think it's instinctively along the way you learn the things that make you the most effective.
Yeah.
And some guys are able to make up for stuff via their athleticism, and some guys have to be anticipatory about things. They've got to be more students of the game than they are athletes. And Brett's obviously a professional hockey player at the highest mm-hmm. level, so you have to be a certain baseline of athleticism has to be there for you. But he's just you're right. He sees the play before it happens, and that helps him, whereas, you know, maybe somebody else, you know, can make up for it in speed or power or physicality or whatever, you know, and that's not really necessarily the game that he plays.
All right, finally, how will you stay awake all the way through the aftermath?
Oh, coffee. Lots of coffee. We have a tremendous coffee machine here at the station, so.
And will you do an IV drip or?
No, or the one thing that I have that I will do, maybe because there's a Starbucks right up the road, I'll go and get one of those red eyes.
Oh, okay.
Which is essentially coffee with espresso.
Yeah, depth charge.
Right.
We call them depth charges.
Right, with a depth charge or two.
Solid.
And that usually does.
You know what else also works? The those cans of triple shot.
Yeah.
I needed that Saturday.
I like those if I can find the ones that aren't sweet, because some of them I feel like are too sweet.
Oh,
for
I didn't
me.
Mind that it was sweet. I was okay with that.
But you do have to time things out, because I'm a regular coffee drinker, right? As are you.
Yes.
So
don't drink coffee during the day, and then boom.
Right. You don't want your body to get used to it. You want to get that charge when you need the charge. So I usually drink a cup to two cups in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I'm really sluggish in the afternoon, then I'll give in. But typically I try to stay away from the
water.
Afternoon cup of coffee.
Drink a bunch of water
just
during the day.
Just drink a bunch of water.
Yep.
And then when I get here into the station, in fact, you know, I'll have a chance to go home after we get done with our show, eat some dinner. I can probably brew some coffee when I'm there and bring it with me.
You could.
And I'll be good to go.
So, yeah.
The harder part actually in that scenario is going to sleep. That becomes
I've never had a problem. The caffeine does not keep me awake.
No, it's not necessarily
if I
that,
want to go to sleep.
Like for me, after games, after post game shows, it takes me an hour at least.
Mm-hmm.
Usually more, usually 90 seconds to wind down.
That's the John Forslund effect.
So maybe.
He's very excitable.
Well, so I go home typically and I'm up for another 90 minutes. So the problem for me is going to be when we get off the air, which is going to be, let's see, 10:30, 11:30, 12:30, 1 o'clock, end of game. Storm aftermath is done by 1:45. I'm home by 2:15. I'm not in bed until 3:30.
Ooh.
You know?
Well, it's going to be pretty similar for me. I'll have some other duties after the game. But I do think it's the John Forslund effect. He has that. I mean, I get excited every time I'm around John.
He's a perfect human.
He is.
He has great hair and fancy dance moves.
Which is interesting. All the new personnel around the building were like experiencing that. Like, John's a pretty snappy dancer.
Yeah.
All right. Have a good week. I'll talk to you at the first intermission for all of these games. It'll be fun.
Can't wait.
You've been listening to the Cane's Corner podcast with Adam Gold. Don't forget, there are many ways you can listen to this podcast, including streaming at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL SportsFan app. And you can also subscribe for free at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Pocket Casts, and TuneIn. Thanks again for listening to the Cane's Corner podcast.